We're going on a radio journey, back to a unique era of broadcasting in Ireland, a time when pirates ruled the airwaves. We're tuning into the 1980s. In the 1980s, wherever you lived in Ireland, you had a choice of many regional or local radio stations. Broadcasters operated without licenses, but it led to a decade of creative radio. Hello, I'm Russell, or Russ Padmore, and I was one of the pioneers of pirate radio in Ireland. I owned a radio station in Donegal, managed one there, and presented programmes on broadcasters in the South East, the Midlands, and notably in the North West. In this programme, I'll explain how freedom of the Irish airwaves shook up broadcasting for about 10 years.
The principal reason that pirate radio flourished in Ireland at that stage was that the state was so slow to provide competition to the state-owned broadcasting company, Radio Televisión. Donegal, Louth, Kerry, there was a great response to local radio.
Irish pirates in the 1980s were encouraged by the success of offshore radio stations in the 1960s, as I hear from the famous British disc jockey Tony Blackburn.
I remember going out on the first day on the tender boat and seeing this little ship bobbing around in the North Sea and thinking it's giving politicians so many problems. I thought, I'm going to be a part of this. Fabulous. Out there in the North Sea, 3.5 miles off the coast of Frinton. So there's not much they could do about it.
Musicians got their first break on unlicensed stations, including Daniel O'Donnell, who tells me pirate radio in Donegal launched his career.
Pirate radio was very important for me because I kind of started the same time as the pirate radios were coming on stream. The pirate radio stations, you see, at the time, they were playing what people wanted to hear.
And business people who owned a pirate radio station speak to me exclusively for the first time about investing in broadcasting, even though it was illegal.
The 1980s was certainly an exciting time for radio in Ireland. In the mid-80s, County Donegal had at least 6 radio stations taking listeners away from RTE and the BBC. I'm in the main street in Buncrana, standing outside a jeweller's shop which has an almost forgotten role in the history of radio in the region. About 40 years ago, I walked up the stairs to a room above the shop where a radio studio was being put together. I had previously been in charge of programmes for a station in London, as well as presenting programmes on ABC Radio in Waterford and Radio West in Mullingar. In 1985, Hugo Boyce and Jackie Crossan, two businessmen based in Innishowen, had decided to invest in starting Northwest Community Radio. They had no experience in broadcasting, and I gave them a lot of advice on running a radio station. I was surprised when they offered me a job on the spot to manage NWCR, as well as present a programme. I was quickly training disc jockeys who had never been on air, showing the news gathering procedures to novice newsreaders and producers, as well as guiding advertising salespeople to write scripts for radio commercials. The signal on medium wave or AM covered the entire Northwest. I've travelled to Buncrana to meet Jackie Crossan at his home overlooking Loch Swilly, a businessman who I haven't met for decades. But it's a chance for Jackie to recall how the idea to start a radio station, just a 15-minute drive from Derry, broadcasting from the Republic, was prompted by a chance meeting in Dundalk.
I opened a jewellery business in Dundalk, and I had 5 or 6 jewellery shops open at the one time. And we fell into the research and all this Northern Ireland thing. We were living on the border. I had actually closed them down on one after the other. There was a radio station in Dundalk, and that's where I got the idea from.
Could that have been Radio Carousel, do you think?
It probably was Radio Carousel. And actually, the guy, that he was one of the DJs, the young lad that I knew, and I bought the property from his father. We were out talking to the son, and the son came up with a thing, and I said, but it must cost a fortune to set up a radio station, you know, a radio station. And he says, no, it doesn't take up a lot of money.
Was it expensive starting a radio station, or was it quite a moderate investment in that kind of business?
It was quite a moderate investment, actually. We done a lot of the work ourselves. So we did. And he gave me the gist of it. He told me what had to do. He said, you have to have a mask up on the hull. And he says, after that then, he says, the equipment's not expensive. And he gave me a few names of people in Cavan that I got on to, went down and seen them. And we took it from there, and the rest was history.
Let's be honest, the 1980s was a tough time for the Irish economy. Opening any sort of business must have been a challenge then.
It was a challenge, believe me. And I, as I say, I was in the jewellery business then, and I had an idea in my head with the jewellery business. I was going to open these. I had five or six, and I wanted to sell the six of them at the one time and get out of the jewellery business. It's just the troubles got so bad. And that's what got me the idea of opening the radio station. It wasn't a big investment, no. It was really quite a very moderate investment.
The radio station was extremely popular. The audience was huge. Yeah. So we're talking about the whole of the northwest of Ireland was effectively tuned into this radio station from a small town, Buncrana in County Donegal, on the doorstep of many big cities like Derry, for example. Yeah. It wasn't just the Donegal audience. It was Derry. Basically across the region.
We were so close to Derry. We focused a lot on Derry, getting the Derry people to listen to it. We were up against Radio Foyle at the time. Our reception from Northern Ireland was fantastic. Up on the Limavady Valley, we shot right across the Limavady Valley and up all along that area. And then, of course, Derry, sitting with the population it had. Phone never stopped. Non-stop music.
Five Star, great name for a group. System Addicts, right here at your favourite station, NWCR, where the time is, well, 4:07. Good afternoon. Welcome into the Ross Padmore Glass Cave, where it all happens every weekday afternoon and early evening between 4 and 6.
That was me, on air, on NWCR in the mid-1980s. For many years afterwards, I met listeners who said they enjoyed the programme. I knew unlicensed broadcasters in places like Donegal were following in the footsteps of offshore pirate radio stations in the 1960s.
Riding at anchor off Harwich and safely outside the 3-mile limit, the innocent-looking ex-ferryboat Caroline is causing quite a stir in official circles. She's a floating broadcasting station, hoping to make a big thing out of commercial radio and waiting for the advertisements to roll in.
Radio Caroline, broadcasting from ships in the Irish Sea and the North Sea, gained millions of listeners. Caroline was started by an Irish businessman, Ronan O'Reilly. He managed a musician, and he was frustrated when he couldn't get his artist's records played on radio.
There were only two record labels in the whole country, EMI and Decca. And essentially, there was only 2 hours a week of any kind of popular music. And so that unless, you know, you were with the two established labels as an artist, it was virtually impossible to get off the ground.
Between 1964 and 1967, Radio Caroline was joined by several other pirate stations, broadcasting to Britain and Ireland from ships anchored in international waters beyond the reach of the authorities.
Wonderful! Music means B-I-T-L. Wonderful Radio London.
Right here at Radio Caroline. Incidentally, if you're into the big band sound, we've got 2 hours of big bands coming your way at 6 o'clock this evening. Right now, here are the Applejacks.
The renowned disc jockey Tony Blackburn, who presented the first ever programme on BBC Radio 1. He became a household name on pirate stations like Radio Caroline and Big L Radio London. He recognised how they disrupted broadcasting, which several years later was repeated by pirate radio stations in Ireland. Tony Blackburn told me he became a disc jockey to help his singing career.
I heard about Radio Caroline. I wanted to get into singing, actually, and I thought by becoming a DJ, they might get into near the record business and start singing, which actually worked, you know. And I was, well, I made it 29 singles and two albums, which none of them sold very well. I saw a program on ITV about Radio Caroline, pirate radio. Basically, what I did, I sent a tape in to Radio Caroline, and I went up there, and I remember doing the audition, and they said, can you come back in a couple of hours? And I did, and then they offered me the job, and that was 1964. And they said, can you start on the Wednesday? This was, I was up there on the Friday. And I said, yeah, I can. And I was up there, and this was in July the 25th, 1964.
And Easter was when Radio Caroline started, so it was a fairly newish station.
Yeah, it was quite a thing, you know. It was, and I remember going out on the first day on the tender boat from Harwich and seeing this little ship bobbing around in the North Sea and thinking it's giving the politicians so many problems. And I thought, I'm going to be a part of this. Fabulous. Out there in the North Sea, 3.5 miles off the coast of Frinton.
International waters at that time, so
waters.
Outside the reach of the authorities.
Flying under the Panamanian flag, so there's not much they could do about it.
What was the radio situation like, that radio world? How did it look before that explosion of pirate radio? Stations were operating for the UK, but obviously they were being heard in Ireland too, Caroline in particular.
Yeah, there was nothing going on really before the pirates. There was Radio Luxembourg in the evening, coming from Luxembourg, and they played pop music, but it was sponsored by the record company, so you heard half a record the whole time, and it was fading in and out. The reception wasn't very good. And the BBC were playing literally 3/4 of an hour of pop music every day. That was all.
There was a market there. Younger people wanted music, and the radio ships provided it. How much did those radio stations broadcasting from ships in the North Sea then really disrupt the situation, disrupt the broadcasting industry?
Well, it completely revolutionised it. Radio Caroline came along, then Big L Radio London. That was the one that I eventually joined, and that was the one that really, it was an American format, and I still use the same American format today. They introduced the wonderful jingles as well. It revolutionized everything, and I mean, the BBC, they plowed on. Certainly people who wanted pop music, they weren't listening to them.
Radio Caroline was started by an Irish businessman, Ronan O'Reilly.
Yeah.
Do you think it took a maverick like that from Ireland to become a rebel, to introduce commercial radio to the UK?
Actually, Ronan O'Reilly wasn't the person who came up with the idea. It was somebody called Alan Crawford, who came from Australia. And one day they met up in a pub, and Alan Crawford started talking to Ronan O'Reilly about what he was going to do. And Ronan O'Reilly, whose parents had shipbuilding business, I believe, and said to Alan Crawford, well, why don't you bring your ship into our docks and we'll fit it up for you. And in the meantime, Ronan O'Reilly bought a ship of his own and made sure he got on the air first.
I think in the end, they became Radio Caroline North and South.
They did, yes. I mean, I was actually employed by Alan Crawford as a singer and Ronan O'Reilly as a DJ. So I was right in the middle. That's why I sort of was able to keep my job for a couple of years with Radio Caroline. I'm really proud to have been a part of that time because it did actually revolutionized radio. I mean, I went to America to listen in New York to the radio stations over there, and I thought, this is what we should be having.
Tony Blackburn, recalling the radio revolution of the 1960s, which influenced pirate broadcasters in Ireland. The first regular unlicensed services took to the Irish airwaves in the 1970s, but many were basically run by amateur enthusiasts. However, by the 1980s, the number of operations had increased.
Broadcasting from Donegal Town on 1566 AM and Stereo FM.
Radio North.
For the greater northwestern area, this is NWCR.
Jingles from three pirate broadcasters in Donegal, including KTOK, the station I started here in Donegal Town. I'm in the town centre close to Donegal Castle, built by the chieftain Red Hugh O'Donnell in the 15th century. And I'm outside the courthouse around the corner from the Diamond, looking across the road to the castle centre where I built the studio for KTOK. The central location made it easy for business owners to visit the radio station to inquire about advertising. In the 1980s, privately owned radio operations crowded the airwaves across the country. They became more professional, and the businesses attracted more revenue from advertising. Colm Kenny, Professor Emeritus at Dublin City University, is an expert in the history of the media in Ireland.
The principal reason that pirate radio flourished in Ireland at that stage was that the state was so slow to provide competition to the state-owned broadcasting company, Radio Televisión. But we were one of the latest countries in Western Europe, if not perhaps the latest, to provide a framework for legal, authorised, licensed competition. And even when the statute was brought in, it was slow to implement it. So therefore, obviously, there was a vacuum, and the vacuum was filled in the first instance by pirate radio stations.
there was more than one government during the 70s and 80s, wasn't there? So it just wasn't one political party to blame.
Certainly not. It was a common sense of control, a reluctance to let go. I think a fear that somehow, you know, the airwaves were more potent than the print media. A fear reflected indeed in the famous Section 31 control of interviews with members of certain prescribed organisations that did not extend to the print media. The airwaves were somehow regarded as more powerful. Successive governments were reluctant to let that power slip away, I suppose.
Why was it that come the 1980s, particularly in rural areas, the radio stations had become much more professional and indeed much more popular?
Well, the professionalism would go hand in hand with their popularity, which attracted advertising, of course, and there wasn't a great sustained suppression of advertising on them in many cases. And they were popular because people could hear local voices and they could hear local news. Some of the stations, of course, were dedicated purely to kind of pop music, which, you know, there was an appetite for, but quite a number found that it was worth their while, or indeed they were interested in providing other kinds of services, news and local discussion in areas, I think, like Donegal, Louth, Kerry. There was a great response to local radio, first in its pirate form where it came, and then subsequently as it was gradually licensed. People liked what they were getting, and what they were getting was relevant to them.
Local newspapers on both sides of the border were obviously a bit concerned about these radio platforms which didn't have a license, but they were taking local advertising, maybe local advertising that would have been in the newspapers, the regional papers.
It's certainly the case that the local radio stations, pirate and subsequently legal local radio stations, were building on a base and a long history of local newspapers in most areas, newspapers that have been very successful over the years in terms of providing local information and, of course, in harnessing local advertising revenue. And as these stations came on air, the local newspapers were very afraid, of course, that they were going to be undermined. And one of the things a number of them did was get involved in local stations as they came on air where they could. A wise investment for the future.
Irish media expert Professor Emeritus Colm Kenny from Dublin City University. So how did local and regional newspapers see the threat of pirate radio stations to their advertising income? A question I put to Salim McGlynn, the editor of Donegal's Finn Valley Voice newspaper in Ballybuffet.
The social impact of the pirate stations were, I think, they were really a force for a mass culture of entertainment, sport, advertising, news. They really give people the right to be represented.
You're the founder of a regional newspaper, which depends on advertising, of course, and I imagine you understand that local newspapers at the time in the 80s were pretty wary of the competition from these unlicensed radio stations. They were also selling commercials to the audience or to the businesses, trying to get the audience to listen. I imagine the long-standing advertisers of the newspapers were very concerned.
News was very important in our house, both radio and TV and newspapers. We all consumed it all the time on a daily basis.
So are you thinking perhaps the radio stations complemented the existing news coverage regionally, or were they competition because they were taking away advertising?
Competition is a two-way thing. I think everybody ups their game if there's someone else in the street trying to get the same advertisers or the same news. The longevity of any endeavour is dependent on how good it is. If it is good, people will like it, it will last. If it isn't, it'll fade away.
So regional newspapers found themselves with another platform which businesses could advertise on. Ultimately, did it make businesses think a bit differently because you could reach audiences in a different way rather than just placing an advert in a newspaper which might only be seen once a week?
Radio it's very immediate, and that's its strength. But the very fact that a newspaper stays around for a week means there's a potential of seeing that ad a lot oftener than you would hear it on radio. I firmly believe they both have a part to play. You have now as well the internet, and I know the challenges. What you're really trying to get is people's time, because we either watch, listen, or read something, and that's what the competition is for.
Pirate radio stations became part of communities, and with various formats, they undermined the reach of RTE and the BBC. Professor Owen Devereux, a social commentator at the University of Limerick, worked on a local pirate radio station. He saw at first hand the influence of stations like Radio Caroline on Irish broadcasting, and listeners in Limerick had a choice of stations to tune into.
One particular station, Sound Channel, they would have pioneered playing bands like the Cranberries. There was another radio station called Radio Limney, Radio Limerick, and that was very much for the pensioners, for the retired, for the sick and infirm and so on. And it was very, and I mean this not in a disrespectful way, it was very Catholic and traditional. And it was the first radio station to ever broadcast death notices. And then you had Big L Radio that I worked on, which was kind of a mixture, really. It had everything. I did a punk rock radio program there, 79, 80 onwards. It had, you know, heavy metal, it had rock music, it had Irish, it had, you know, Gaelic, it had sport, it had GAA, it had religion, and it had mainstream pop you could hear in Birmingham or Manchester or anywhere like that. So the mix was really interesting.
Do you think Big L in Limerick actually was learning lessons from that very big pirate radio station based on a ship off the coast of the southeast of England in the 1960s, which was a very American style station?
It was strongly influential. And indeed, some of the DJs who ended up in Limerick would have been involved in the latter days of Radio Caroline, you know. So again, you have that direct link, you know, you can name names that well, you know. So Stuart Clark, for example, who's now the deputy editor of Hot Press magazine, he would have come to Limerick from the tail end of Radio Caroline to work on Sound Channel, and ended up then staying there and ending up in the music industry and becoming quite an influential rock music journalist. The problem nowadays is one of, it's not just about ownership being concentrated, but it's also about, and this is true, I think, of media more generally, so-called mainstream media more generally, there is a problem now of homogenization, of sameness, and that is a problem.
But go back to the 80s, in contrast, it seemed to me that the radio stations I worked with and some of the competition were having a great social impact.
In Big L, there was a program on a Friday night that ran for 4-5 hours called the Mad Hatter's Ball. And it was just young people, kids all around Limerick City and County ringing in, talking about their lives and so on. And that's now all gone because radio has become too safe. Many of these radio stations were raided by the Department of Post Telegraphs and by the Garda Síochána. This happened numerous times. And local people really did genuinely rally around. And children brought their pocket money and older people brought their pensions so a transmitter could be bought again, so it could be restored.
Social commentator and music historian Professor Owen Devereux from the University of Limerick. You're listening to A History of Pirate Radio and its impact on the northwest of Ireland in the 1980s. Still to come, Daniel O'Donnell admits he owes his successful singing career to pirate radio.
Well, they were broadcasting to a good distance. It was amazing, I suppose, how quick, once the radio station started to play the record.
From the late 1970s, pirate radio stations were set up for short-term broadcasts to cover festivals. That naturally gave airtime to musicians booked to play at events like the Mary from Dunloe Festival in West Donegal. In the mid-1980s, unlicensed radio stations, which broadcast every day, gave a boost to musicians across the country by playing their records. In the 1980s, Joe Gallagher was a disc jockey working in nightclubs across the Northwest, as well as on pirate radio stations like my operation, KTOK, in Donegal. The experience proved useful when he started a business as a music promoter and launched an entertainment agency in Strabane.
Country artists were being made by travelling around Ireland, going into all the radio stations, whether it be pirate or whether it wasn't a pirate radio station, getting airplay, breaking new ground and getting their message out there. And that was great.
And that would have applied to those who would be at the top of the tree, the superstars of Irish country music or Irish music generally, but also people further down that ladder.
Absolutely. And once they got a radio interview, it helped them, like an education, like an apprenticeship, to be able to be interviewed, to be able to conduct themselves in a proper interview for whatever time they went to the BBC or the bigger station. They had cut their teeth in pirate radio station.
I remember actually some people who hadn't even made a record but had a cassette recording of their own performances would bring it into the radio station, and that would make them a known name amongst the audience, which would lead to booking more gigs. It seemed that radio was having a great impact on the entertainment sector.
Absolutely. And if you take somewhere like the Part and Glass in Donegal, who had three nights of entertainment, maybe two nights country, one night pop, because pop was pretty big. Once they got that CD, or back then, and the cassette, as you rightly said, once they put that on, we could hear, he says, Lovebug, the Chevys, Rock Stewart. They come out with all these cassettes first, and then maybe a vinyl, a 7-inch vinyl. And once they could get airplay then.
I know you worked as a disc jockey in Scandinavia during the 1980s, so were you able to draw comparisons with the entertainment sector in different countries in Scandinavia, nightclubs, etc., but also how the music and entertainment industry was developing in Ireland thanks to pirate radio?
We were very much behind Scandinavia doing programmes. I did a programme on a radio station in Scandinavia on a Friday, done on a hard disk drive as opposed to a cassette where we used to do it here. The radio stations were actually more professional. It wasn't pirate. They would have granted you a license. And everybody used it as a community station, a local station. And they got the airplay for the bands, the local bands, the international bands were travelling. It created another string to their bow as well. And people wanted to have the top artist on their station. They wanted them in for interviews. They wanted to do this. Ireland was slightly behind that. Don't forget, we were governed differently, and it was harder to do. You know, the Irish government were probably, and probably still are, behind the eight ball when it comes to being progressive in this station. Look at RTE at the minute.
Based on your role of promoting bands, do you think that the pirate radio scene, the industry that developed, has somehow had an impact today?
Oh, very much so. People didn't care whether it was pirate or whether it wasn't. So neither does the artist. All he wants to do is get his name out there. And the secret of any artist is stay in the public domain as much as you can. The pirate radio station was something the same as YouTube or Spotify or whatever in this day. Radio's changed an awful lot. As far as I'm concerned, I would love to be back doing pirate radio.
Joe Gallagher, a former pirate radio DJ who owns an entertainment booking agency in Strabane. RTE and the BBC lost listeners as people tuned in to pirate radio. The local station supported musicians from their own region by playing their records.
Pretty little girl from Omagh in the county of Tyrone.
The town that I have loved so well.
As the train pulls out today from Derry City.
Yes, I'm dreaming of Ireland and County Tyrone.
When I was the manager of NWCR in Buncrana, I noticed we received a lot of requests for songs related to Tyrone and especially Derry. Understandable, as we had a big audience in the city just across the border. But regional rivalry among listeners and the staff raised the question, shouldn't a radio station based in Donegal play more songs with a local flavour? A solution soon emerged. A woman brought in a recording by a new artist.
Oh, I know it's not right, reminiscing tonight of days that are gone and returning no more.
Donegal Shore by Daniel O'Donnell. We played it, and I didn't realise at the time, but giving airplay to that local singer had a lasting impact on his career and the Irish music business.
Far away on a Donegal shore.
Decades later, Daniel tells me he owes his success to pirate radio.
Well, Ross, pirate radio was very important for me because I kind of started the same time as the pirate radios were coming on stream. I had recorded my Donegal Shore and Stand Beside Me in 1983. And then I made an album with Ritz Records about 85. And that was really when the pirate radios were at their height.
You came into the radio station that I was managing in Buncrana, and I noticed slowly but surely there were more requests for effectively what was a Donegal record to be played on a Donegal station, which was very close to Derry. So was that really the start that gave the big boost?
Oh, absolutely. My Donegal Shore was very, very, very instrumental in me getting my foot on the ladder, so to speak. And it was played non-stop on the pirate radio stations, you know, Ironside and NWCR. And they were all over. They were all over, you know, the country.
I recall the fact that other radio stations would like to speak to us in Buncrana about this record that was getting popular, and that seemed to effectively spread the word in the broadcasting community. Your record was being played across the country.
I recorded it on a single, and on the single had my Donegal Shore and Stand Beside Me. And we made Stand Beside Me the A-side. This is way back in the day, and it's for years now for people listening. A-sides and B-sides. But Donegal Shore was the B-side. But really, my Donegal Shore was the one that caught the attention. Even though Stand Beside Me too was popular, and I still sing it more or less at the beginning of every concert that I do, my Donegal Shore was definitely the one that was written by Johnny McCauley. The pirate radio stations, you see, at the time, they were playing what people wanted to hear. You know, they were playing all the Irish, you know, the country and the show bands and, you know, Joe Dolan and all the singers, Larry Cunningham and Margaret and Philomena and everybody that you wouldn't hear. And then all the American country singers. So it was obviously, you know, important to the people. The stations were having concerts, and like once you were played on the radio, everybody heard it.
So you would say perhaps that you owe the big boost at the start, the big break you got, just down to pirate radio?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, that was the only thing in the beginning. I wasn't on television till about 1986.
Those unlicensed stations were in some ways very unlike the BBC or RTE or the big American networks, and yet somehow, despite the limited equipment, they were very, very popular.
Well, they were broadcasting to a good distance too, and like I remember going up to, I was in at Mickey Bradley up in NWCR. I remember going in, I can visualise it so well. I feel yous were upstairs, was it?
The radio station in Buncrana you refer to, the first radio station in Buncrana was above a jewellery shop at the Lower Main Street, and then it moved above a video store.
I remember going upstairs, you know. I can still visualise, you know. I suppose in the beginning you remember more than you would in latter times. But it was amazing, I suppose, how quick, once the radio station started to play the record.
Would you say that the unlicensed stations, which operated for years in the 1980s, were linking different communities together?
Oh, absolutely. And you see, radio is a great connection for people. I always think people on their own listen to radio, maybe more than they watch television. It's almost like there's somebody talking to you.
Daniel O'Donnell's career took off after his records were played on pirate radio stations. The new emerging Irish country music artists in the 1980s certainly got a boost from being on air, but the local stations played a wide variety of music produced in Ireland.
Happens all the time, it's gonna happen, happen. Oh, my perfect cousin, what I like to do, he doesn't. I wanna hold her tight, get teenage kicks right through the night. Where I am.
By the 1980s, the Undertones from Derry had recorded several international hits, but in 1983 the band split. Bass guitarist Michael Bradley was wondering what to do next when he heard about a radio station being set up close to Derry, across the border in Donegal. He told me how he became a pirate disc jockey and how the station operated.
I was back in Derry in 1986. You know, the Undertones had broken up a couple of years beforehand. I'd been in London after that. When I was in Derry, somebody told me, I found out that there was a pirate radio station starting up in Derry, and they were looking for people to read the news. And I thought, I could do that.
Hang on just a moment. You were famous for being effectively a punk rocker in the Undertones. That's not qualification for being a journalist.
I didn't see it like that. The music was done. I had actually, round about that time, I'd gone back to school, doing some A-levels. And I remember going along to see somebody in an office in Derry on Shipkey Street. It was one of those things where the office was in Derry, but the broadcast was not in Derry because it was, you know, over the border for legal reasons. And I went in and I had a brief interview with a couple of fellas that were running the station. And they did let me know. They phoned me a couple of days later and said, no, we've got someone else to do that. I says, but would you do a music show? And I went, yes, of course. Playing records on a radio station is very different from making records.
Would you say that the pirates or unlicensed radio stations gave musicians the opportunity to get records played locally, which would not have been played by national stations? Did it open a new platform?
I think it probably did, because in this station, Anna, there was no music policy. And they really just left it up to yourself. You know, for people working in radio, you know, they might think, well, was there a producer there? He says, of course there wasn't a producer. It was you on your own. You got a brief instruction on how to put the station on air. I lived in Shantallow, which was kind of on the north side of Derry, and it was not too far to the border. So I would get on a bicycle on a Saturday lunchtime, and with a backpack full of vinyl records, not MP3s, obviously hadn't been invented, not CDs, no one had CDs back then, all your vinyl records in a bag and cycled over the border to a location. Couldn't even tell you the name of the road. It was like a cottage, very basic, in kind of the middle of nowhere, but it had electricity. There was a tower outside. There was a transmitter outside. I really enjoyed it, as anyone would, because it's kind of gratifying to your ego, you know, for someone to say, you choose the music. I really enjoyed it, playing the records that I liked. Elvis Costello played some Beatles songs and some Ramones and so on, some 1960s punk bands too. I've just realised as well, I'm kind of still doing the same type of programme today.
Much less freedom at the BBC, of course, but ultimately there was that freedom of broadcasting in the pirate radio era. And of course, it did bring new musicians, new artists through, giving a boost to people like Daniel O'Donnell, for example, who kind of freely admits pirate radio launched his career.
That time as well, you just knew that NWCR is the name that always comes to my mind, Northwest Community Radio, based in Buncrana. And I almost still associate Daniel and NWCR. They were broadcasting to people who were probably underserved by RTE.
What about the fact that the pirate radio stations, by their very nature, operating outside the law, were not paying for the copyright? You as an artist, I remember in Buncrana, for example, and in Donegal Town playing Undertones records on air, and you would not have received a penny for that. Would that have annoyed you?
No, I don't think so. I would just be happy for the records to be played. Happens all the time, it's gonna happen, happen. For my perfect cousin, what I like to do, he doesn't. I wanna hold her tight. Get teenage kicks right through the night. Here I am.
From the Undertones to Pirate Radio, an experience for Michael Bradley, who now works with the BBC. I'm Russell Padmore, and you've been listening to a history of the impact of pirate radio during the 1980s. In the next episode, I'll explain how unlicensed broadcasters became profit-making enterprises, creating jobs when the Irish economy was struggling as the nation was deep in debt.
The backdrop to the 1980s was atrocious, with very high unemployment, high inflation, very weak economic growth, and very significant outward migration.
And the influence that unlicensed stations had on communities across the border. The owner of a Donegal-based pirate station gives his first ever radio interview. Paddy Simpson reveals how he targeted listeners in Northern Ireland.
Our target really wasn't any show, and our target was Northern Ireland. The Protestant population in Northern Ireland loved country music. There were pirate stations, but at the time the government had no will to close them down.
Join me next time for more on the history of pirate radio in the 1980s as I continue to analyse the long-lasting impact of a decade of unlicensed broadcasters in the Northwest. This programme was funded by Commissioner Mann with the television licence fee.